morning, good evening, good afternoon, and good golly, Miss Molly, we're back. It's Historical Hystericals. Hi, everybody, and welcome once again to Historical Hystericals. I'm Chris Brennan.
And I'm Commander Mike, and we are not your regular presenters.
No, well, we're not, no.
Well, as it turns out, we're very irregular presenters.
It's been nearly a year. Has it been over a year? Oh, my God.
We've had our own little gap year, too, yes.
Yeah, you could have had a baby in this time.
No, thank you. Look, we have been busy. We have been doing other things.
We have.
Yes, due to a computer error at the electoral office, you were voted mayor of your local area and then ousted by the local mafia. I was kicked out of South Africa for being aesthetically unpleasant. It's been an eventful year.
It has been a bit of an up and down roller coaster. I've been all around the world and come back here. Why? Well, because we love you, as they used to say in the old Mickey Mouse Club.
Oh, yes, and we've both been there. Okay, that's another story for another day.
Oh, yeah. Well, join us in our other podcast, The Travels of Chris and the Commander. Now, today, Mike, is a very, very special broadcast. Today we are dealing with some of the icons of the comedy world.
Two great names. You don't even need to know their surnames. If we say we're talking about Bud and Lou, you know who we're talking about.
Who else could it be? But, of course, Kevin Budd and Lou. No? No?
Yeah, Bud Abbott and Lou Costello.
They're the ones, yes. But where did he get Bud from? That's interesting, because he was born William Alexander Abbott on the 2nd of October, 1895. Now, that's a long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
This is one of the strange things. Doing research for this podcast, I've been finding so many misrepresentations in the press. Some people say that Bud Abbott was born in a Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey circus tent.
Uh-huh.
Now, it's true that his mother was a bareback horse rider for the circus,
mm-hmm.
and his father worked as an advance man.
Well, what is an advance man for the circus, do you know?
He goes ahead, pre-sells tickets, arranges the place where the tent's going to be pitched.
Oh, I get you, right.
He's doing pre-publicity for the thing.
Oh, I got you. Right, I'm with you. When I'm going through the research, you know, he's an advanced man. I'm going, wow, he was ahead of his time, was he? But no.
Well, the trouble is, some reports say he was born in a circus tent. Some reports say he was born in a hospital in the town where the circus was going through. So some of the press reports throughout their whole lives have been somewhat questionable. We'll get to more of that later on.
Now, of course, Bud was born and raised in Asbury Park, New Jersey, and he was smitten with a performing bug at a very early age. He dropped out of school at the age of 14 and began working in carnivals, and he later began working in theatres across the country. So he was really immersed in the theatre and the performing right from his early, early age.
He took up an administrative role, became the manager of the Nation Theatre in Detroit, and this is where he actually started performing on stage as a straight man to vaudeville performers as they came in. Now, this led to the chance encounter that would change his life.
Now, doing a performance as a straight man, it's sort of what set him up for his life, really. I mean, he was the penultimate straight man, you know.
Yeah.
Every great man has to have a partner, and Bud married Becky Smith, his wife, which wasn't his wife before he married her, but you know what I mean, on September the 17th, 1918, after an acquaintance of only 6 hours. Now, talk about a whirlwind romance. I mean, they must have met each other at the soup, and he's popped the question by dessert. That's got to be a record.
Well, she must have seen him as some sort of hero, because they met during a yacht trip on the Potomac River, during which Bud saved Betty's girlfriend from drowning. So his future wife saw him save her friend from drowning. And shortly afterwards, a few hours afterwards, they went to the marriage bureau to apply for a wedding license.
You'd think he would have gone for a fishing license first. Now, at this point, it may be best to clarify exactly what a straight man is, because not everybody will understand it, but we'll go into what it comes up to. Now, it's not saying that was his sexual preference, although he did marry Betty, so we all know he was straight. But, you know, it's a comedy term.
Yes. It's a straight man is someone who would set up the jokes and work to rein in the comedian when they've gone too far or starting to lose the audience. Now,
we don't have any straight men, do we?
Not in this place.
No.
Now, you can't underestimate the value of a good straight man. Now, Bud Abbott was one of the best straight men in history, I think. He would be the con man, the bully, the overbearing person that got undone by the comedy of the, in this case, Lou Costello. The other great straight man I can think of was Margaret Dumont.
Yeah, Jerry Lewis?
No, Jerry was the... he referred to himself as a trained monkey. Dean Martin.
Dean Martin was more the straight man, yeah.
Not really. They really shared way more of the humour. Look at some of their recordings. Dean, during their variety shows, Dean had just as many laughs as Jerry.
Hmm. To put it simply for you, everybody, a straight man is not the guy that says knock knock, he's the guy that says who's there.
Yeah, exactly.
So helps set the joke up, gets it rolling, gives the comedian the chance to really shine.
So this moves us on. We'll just leave Bud Abbott at the theatre, managing and going on stage occasionally as a straight man for the vaudeville performers.
We'll take Bud and put him aside for the second, and we'll march on.
March on and talk about Lou Costello. Here's the guy who... Lou Costello. He's the man who would ask the eternal question, who's on first?
Who's on first?
Exactly.
We'll get there. which reminds me, before we launch into Lou Costello, everybody knows what our outgoing music is, and you've all heard it before. Wait till the end of our outgoing music after the end of this podcast, and you'll get a special surprise.
Yes. Now, Lou was born Louis Francis Costello on March 6, 1906. Now, he grew up in his hometown of Paterson, New Jersey. Now, it turns out that he now mentions Paterson, New Jersey in virtually every movie and television episode that he's ever appeared in. After school, he had been bitten by the entertaining bug.
Ow!
Worked as a carpenter in both MGM and Warner Brothers Studios in an attempt to break into show business. So he appeared as an extra in a few movies from 1926 through to 1928. Now, most noticeably in Laurel Hardy's The Battle of the Century, which is considered the most celebrated pie fight ever filmed.
I'd like to dispute that. Blazing Saddles would be the most celebrated pie fight ever filmed.
I'd like to get film and compare the two.
They're probably pie for pie about the same, but yes. Yeah.
So after several years of no success in Hollywood, Lou left and began working in vaudeville circuit on his way back to Paterson, New Jersey.
Which he mentions in every movie.
Of course, I think we'll be mentioning it in almost every paragraph now.
Exactly.
Yes. However, his desire to entertain grew stronger, and Lou started working in vaudeville, gaining valuable experience over the years, learning timing, character, pacing, and how to present a clean
timing.
Show. Sorry?
Timing.
Timing, everything.
Yes.
It is also, you might remember when we were talking about the Three Stooges all those many months ago, it was reported back then that Lou Costello would be side stage watching Curly Howard and watching some of his mannerisms and some of his gestures just to see how it's done. So he'd stand in the wings and watch people on stage to learn.
Which is the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Now, as was customary at the time with most of the comedians, Lou worked with a straight man on stage, someone there to help him with the jokes. And according to Lou, one night in 1931, his normal straight man was sick. And he asked the theatre manager, who'd also worked as a straight man, to fill in. And the guy with his weird sort of name of Bud Abbott agreed and decided to help out. And that was the birth of one of the greatest comedy teams of all time.
Now, it's interesting to note that Bud was 36 years old when he met Lou.
Oh, there's hope for me yet.
It's amazing how much these people work to become an overnight sensation.
Yes, it's so hard to be an instant success.
So the new act of Abbott and Costello was created that night, and throughout the 1930s, the men worked together in burlesque shows, minstrel shows, vaudeville, and in movie houses. They were honing their timing and perfecting their skills.
And in Paterson, New Jersey.
Yes. The team's years in vaudeville continued to be a learning experience with his new partner, and the act increased in popularity. So even so, while they're on the up and up, Lou married Anne Battlers, who he had met while performing.
She definitely was.
In 1938, they received national exposure for the first time, appearing on the Kate Smith radio show. So they'd been performing together as a team for 7 years before they got their big break.
Yeah, you sort of, when you think of Abbott and Costello, you never ever think of them as being apart. You always think of, you know, well, yes, they did movies and all that sort of stuff, and the names are synonymous with each other, but it was a long time before that partnership was actually formed and created, and then another 7 years before it actually became the big household name.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing, too, was when they started making money, it was at Lou's insistence that monies earned from their act were to be split 60-40 in favour of Bud Abbott. Lou's reasoning was that the comics are a dime a dozen. Good straight men are hard to find. And that was the way it was done all through their career, through the movies, 60-40.
What a great friend he was.
Hmm.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah?
Can I discuss our contract again?
There's a contract?
There's money?
Yes. Oh, that's right. They had a contract written up on an egg.
On an egg?
Yeah. It must be binding. It's an egg.
Oh, God.
Oh, I think there's some of these things going to be cut out.
They soon started to gain the notice of the power players in the entertainment industry. And in 1939, Lou signed a contract, not on an egg, with Universal Pictures. Next year, Bud and Lou filmed One Night in the Tropics. Have you seen that one? If not, have a look for it. Maybe on YouTube?
It is on YouTube. It's very interesting because basically whatever storyline was going on in the film stops while Bud Abbott and Lou Costello sit down for dinner in a restaurant and do some very, very funny stuff. Then they leave and the story continues.
Because they were only really small roles in the film, but as they were filming their roles, they enlarged the characters, and it just kept on going. And time again, as the film crew kept breaking up with laughter during the filming, Abbott and Costello played on.
Yeah. In this movie, they introduced several of their signature routines, including a very abbreviated version of Who's On First, and $1 a day. Now, this is where Bud has hired Lou for a sum of $1 per day for the last year, and now that it's time to pay up, finds exception after an excuse to pay him, and ends up paying him $1 for the entire year. YouTube, look it up. Remember, One Night in the Tropics on YouTube.
Now, we've mentioned Who's On First a couple of times already. I've got to tell you a quick story about a day when I was at a convention. It was a science fiction convention. Yes, I'm a nerd. And I'm standing there with a friend of mine, and we're chatting away, and a person walked past in costume. And my friend turned to me and says, "The guy over there, is he from Trek or from Doctor Who?" And I looked over at the person, and they were dressed up in an elaborate Doctor Who outfit. And I said, "Oh, who?" meaning Doctor Who. And he looked at me and went, "The guy over there." And I looked across and said, "Who?" And he said, "That guy in the costume." And I went, "Who?" He says, "That guy over there." And it went on for about 3 minutes, and he was dead serious.
Oh, he wasn't a straight man. He was stupid.
Well, he might be listening, so I won't say he was stupid. It just it was just one of those classic moments when I'm sort of halfway through it and I'm thinking, hang on a second, this is like a Who's On First routine. This is funny. Okay. But he didn't get the joke anyway.
No. So it was in 1939, the Lou's daughter was born, Carol, his daughter's name was.
1939, the year when Carol was born.
It was the next year, 1940. Bud Abbott and Lou Costello starred in Buck Privates, and that became a major hit. It grossed over $10 million. 1940, $10 million.
Snapping duck turtles. Wow. Now, back then, movie tickets were like 25 cents a ticket, right?
Exactly, and it still made $10
million.
Now, Buck Privates did better than Citizen Kane financially.
Oh, I'm staggered. That's amazing.
So, of course, the studio, seeing a good thing when they see it, immediately followed up with In the Navy, Keep 'Em Flying, and Hold That Ghost. All of them were great successes and propelled Bud and Lou into superstardom.
Of course, with all the financial rewards that go with being superstars.
Oh, yes. They also started, in 1941, they started their weekly radio show, the Abbott and Costello Show, on ABC Radio Network in USA. It ran until 1946. Now, remember, this is going through the war years.
Mm.
And you can get some of these recordings. they're fascinating to hear. Absolutely wonderful.
Now, apparently, during the time on their ABC, they also hosted a 30-minute children's radio show called the Abbott and Costello Children's Show. Now, that aired on Saturday mornings. Now, I can imagine, I mean, they weren't all that blue with their comedy, but I imagine some of the jokes would have had to have been a little bit G-rated.
This is it. They learned how to do vaudeville, burlesque, church fates. They could do anything, anywhere, because they knew how to present to the audience they're in front of. Okay, now in 1942, their radio and film careers continued by releasing movies like Who Done It, Pardon My Sarong, Rio Rita, and Ride 'Em Cowboy, all of which were great box office hits.
Now, here's a question for you, Mike. I'll just throw this at you straight away. How many movies have they done together? Or did they do together?
Oh, I'd have to go back and...
It's got to be 50 or 60 at least, I would think. I mean, there was just so many of them that just kept on churning them out.
I'd have to go back and look it up. But,
God, he put him on the spot.
Absolutely, put me on the spot, and I just can't come at it. I'm flicking through my research here, and I can't see the notes written on it.
I got him.
Yeah, okay, you got me.
Okay, so 1942 was their film and radio career taking off. 1943, in addition to filming It Ain't Hay, Bud Abbott and Lou Costello used their immense popularity to raise money for the war effort. So they would have gone out with, what was that, the S.O.? No, it was the...
U.S.O.
U.S.O., yes, yep. Yes. They would have gone out with the U.S.O., much the same as
Bob
the
Hope.
Guy, that's it, the guy with the golf club. That's what I was trying to think.
Bob Hope, U.S.O., they were selling war bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're responsible for selling more war bonds than anyone else.
Wow. Because they also did a cross-country tour at their own expense to raise funds on behalf of the war bond drive. So they took their own money, said, right, we're going to go out and we're going to try and raise some money to help our country during the great time of crisis. So more comedians of today should take a leaf out of their book.
Yeah.
Take their own money and bog off to another country. Yes.
Now, they were honoured for their work on the on the steps of New York's City Hall by the mayor, for raising a record-breaking $89 million in just 3 days.
Oh, my God.
$89 million in 3 days in 1943.
Where are these guys now? America, you need Abbott and Costello.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Now, funnily enough, there are two instances that happened during the shooting of Hit the Ice, served to illustrate some of the characteristics that Lou had developed. The film was started by director Earl Kenton, but he and Lou clashed on several occasions, and Kenton was fired and replaced by Charles Lamont. Now, Lou tended to become more and more demanding and rebellious as time went on. Superstar, you know?
Oh, of course.
A more humorous anecdote is that Lou suspected that Universal wasn't giving him and Bud Abbott the agreed-upon share of the profits made on the films. The suspicion was later proven in legal action they took against Universal. But based on his suspicions, he developed a habit of picking out furniture he liked from the sets of the films and taking it home. Now, one day, Charles Lamont, the director, showed up to reshoot a scene on the ice rink, only to discover that the wrought iron patio furniture that had been there the previous day had disappeared. Now, Lou denied knowing anything about it, and Lamont said he would shoot no more scenes until the furniture was returned. A compromise was finally reached where Lou would bring back the furniture, the scene would be shot, and then he'd be allowed to bring it all back home again.
That's kind of, yeah.
If you grew up knowing the value of a dollar, you'd appreciate that.
Yes. Welcome to my home, furnished by Universal. Now, after they completed filming the movie Hit the Ice, they continued fundraising with disastrous health results for Lou. He contracted rheumatic fever, resulting in heart damage. Now, it also prevented him from working for 6 months. So that was a pretty severe slug in the backside for him, wasn't it?
Yeah. And now, to his credit, during that time, Bud refused to appear with a different comedian due to his loyalty to his partner. And he continued to host their weekly radio show.
And this reminds me of Laurel and Hardy.
Yes.
Where if one was sick, the other one wouldn't perform. And it wasn't just a case of, I'm nothing without him. It was a case of, no, he's my friend, he's my partner, I ain't going nowhere without him. Mm-hmm. And that sort of camaraderie, you don't get a lot of the time these days.
And unfortunately, the bad news continued when Lou was well enough to return to radio in 1943. He was going back to his radio show, first appearance back November 4th, 1943. He arrived at the NBC studio and he received word that his infant son, Lou Jr., had accidentally drowned in the family swimming pool.
Oh, my God.
The baby was just 2 days short of his first birthday.
Oh.
Now, Lou had asked his wife to keep young Butch up that night so the boy could hear his dad on the radio for the first time. Rather than cancel the broadcast, Lou said, "Wherever he is tonight, I want him to hear me." He went on with the show. No one in the audience knew of the death until after the show when Bud Abbott explained the events of the day. How that phrase, "the show must go on," must have epitomized by Lou that night. That must have been so hard for him to do.
I've got goosebumps.
I have trouble telling that story. It's just...
Oh. You can't imagine how he would have even been able to drag up the strength to be funny, but he did.
And the fact that the audience had no idea until the end of the show, they're clapping, Lou just walked off, and Bud said, "Well, thank you, but I've got to tell you something," and explained it, and it was just... Oh. Incredible.
Anyway, moving on. In 1944, the boys were having contract renegotiation difficulties. Apparently, they couldn't get any more free furniture out of Universal. And as a result, during the filming of In Society, Bud and Lou refused to do reshoots. So, you know, the director would say, "Perfect, do it again." They go, "No, sorry, that's it. You're not getting anything else." And every day at exactly 4 p.m., whether they were in the middle of a scene or in the middle of a line, they would immediately cease work and go home. Thus started the union movement. Interestingly enough, this led to the practice of shooting a scene from multiple angles with multiple cameras, which has since become like a common practice. Everybody does it. You get three or four cameras in, so you can do the cut from one person to another, and you get the seamless conversation going on. Eventually, new contracts were signed, and Bud and Lou went on to make Lost in a Harem. Interesting concept. And in 1945, Abbott and Costello in Hollywood, here come the co-eds and the naughty 90s.
Now that one contained the best version of Who's On First. So I looked that up.
Is that the full version of Who's On First?
Yep, that's the full version. Actually, that's the one where they're standing on a stage, doing it pretty much as they did in vaudeville. Lou with a baseball cap and Bud in a baseball uniform as the manager of the thing.
That's the one. That's the iconic one that I always remember. Now, when you think about it, these guys were the biggest box office names of the time. So, I mean, pulling in $10 million for a movie in box office grosses is just amazing. For that time, the thing. And these guys are making three films a year during the World War.
Yeah.
I mean, how do they do it? And if you said to Angelina Jolie or Arnold Schwarzenegger, or say, "Right, you've got to do three films a year," now they'd go, "Oh, don't do that, no. I will do one movie." And that'd be it. And then Arnie would chime in and say something.
You also got to remember, too, in this time, the 1940s, they didn't have agents and managers as they do now. So it was the boys doing their own contract negotiations.
Mm. So not only really funny guys, not only fantastic workers, not only great charity workers, very savvy businessmen as well. Because they had to be. That was it.
Yeah.
Moving along to 1946, Bud Abbott and Lou Costello moved their weekly radio show, The Abbott and Costello Show, to the NBC network, where it remained through to 1949. But other than that, the show remained unchanged. So in the same year, they produced two of their most outstanding films, The Little Giant and The Time of Their Lives. Now, I'm sure, Mike, you've got a few stories about those ones.
Actually, I did see Little Giant a while ago, and it was interesting because they changed from their standard formula, and the comedy was no longer driven by the rapid-fire verbal one-and-twoing between Bud Abbott and Lou Costello. It was more character-based. They're good films, but they did poorly in the box office because it wasn't what people were expecting from Abbott and Costello.
The rapid-fire sort of comedy, that would lend back to more the vaudeville time things where you had to keep the audience...
Yeah,
you know,
bang, 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 bang.
Yeah.
But this one, they were more relaxed and the characters came through more than the comedy.
Mm. A little bit too different for the public at the time, and that's not quite what they expected from Abbott and Costello.
Now, a rift had developed between the two when Bud hired a domestic servant, a maid, who had already been fired by Lou.
Ooh, oh no, you don't cut a man's grass like that. No.
Yeah, well, no, she'd already been fired. Lou sacked her, and then Bud hired her, and Lou wasn't happy. So he refused to speak to Bud, except when performing.
that would be kind of hard to do.
So they'd
it?
Be backstage, not even looking at each other, or on set, and then the cameras would start rolling, they'd do their lines together, and then just walk away.
Hmm. I think you can see that in some of the films in 1946, where the characters appear separately to do their speaking roles, but then they get together for the comedic timing and all that sort of thing. So even the characters in the movies, the roles were written so that they didn't have to interact on screen.
Yeah. Now, this went through to 1947, when Bud resolved the issue by volunteering to help Lou with his pet charity, as it was a foundation for underprivileged children. So,
as he would.
Yep, it was like, okay, all forgiven, back to, here we go again.
Mm. Now, it was 1947 when Bud and Lou returned to their standard movie formula with Buck Privates Come Home. Now, this was a sequel to their first blockbuster hit, Buck Privates. And they did The Wistful Widow of Wagon Gap. Now, you try saying that with a mouthful of marbles.
Yeah, that's not easy, is it?
No, now, during the filming of The Wistful Willow of Wagon Gap, Lou's father passed away.
During the filming of what film?
The Wistful Willow of Wagon Gap. Oh, my God.
A bit too cool to get you to say it again, wasn't it?
Oh, definitely. Oh, my crikey. Yes, Bud's father unfortunately passed away during the filming of The Wistful Willow of Wagon Gap. Now, being a Western film buff, oh, God. And as an ultimate tribute, Lou, I've lost it, my tongue's gone, I'm sorry.
Yeah, let's put it this way. Lou's father died, and since he was a Western film buff, Lou listed him on the credits as associate producer Sebastian Cristillo.
Thank
you. His dad got a credit on the film.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Posthumous, but it was a credit.
Yeah, probably would have liked a bit of credit while he was still alive, but anyway.
Now, the next year continued in the same way with Noose Hangs High. The Noose Hangs High. Yeah, I got the easy part of that one, didn't I?
You did, yeah.
Yes, and Mexican Hayride, until they made their final movie in 1948, which changed the direction of the team's career. It was Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
I love that film.
And it was a financial hit, and it led to a bevy of movies following the same formula. We had Abbott and Costello Meet the Killer Boris Karloff, Abbott and Costello Meet the Invisible Man, Abbott and Costello Meet Captain Kidd, Abbott and Costello Meet Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, Abbott and Costello Meet the Keystone Cops, and Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy.
And Abbott and Costello Meet Abbott and Costello.
So in addition to all the Abbott and Costello Meet movies, the boys continued making other films, including the Abbott and Costello in the Foreign Legion.
They were great. I love those ones.
Yeah, look closely. There's one thing that always confused me. They're driving a Jeep over the sand.
Mm-hmm.
They pull up next to the sergeant in the Foreign Legion, and the wheels squeak to a halt. They're on sand.
It's American TV. When they took off, it probably squealed off as well. They always do.
Yeah, the Foley artist said, I'm on board. I've got nothing to do. I'll put squeaking tyres in here. Abbott Costello in the Foreign Legion, 1950. Coming Around the Mountain, 1951. Lost in Alaska, 1952. Abbott Costello Go to Mars, 1953.
I've got that somewhere.
Yep. Jack and the Beanstalk, 1952. I've got that one. Dance With Me, Henry, in 1956. They were still popular. The team's movie career seemed to be dwindling down. This, however, is when television greeted them with open arms with the Abbott and Costello Show, 1952 to 1954. Reusing many of the popular movie routines for their weekly TV series, in addition, the television series was produced by Television Corporation of America Production Company, owned by one Lou Costello. Guess what?
What's that?
The entire series is available on DVD.
Oh, yeah.
I've got it.
I've got, well, I didn't have any doubt.
It is great. Look now, around. You can find it. It's wonderful.
There's something I haven't heard a mention of for a couple of pages so far.
Yep.
Paterson, New Jersey.
Oh, this is great. In the DVDs, you can see where Lou mentions it in almost every episode.
If you get hold of the DVDs, have a look. It's worth it just for watching the listening out for Paterson, New Jersey, because it just pops up all of a sudden.
And some of the things happen on stage, on TV, because it's live TV. They didn't have videotape back then.
Mm.
So things start to go wrong, and the boys break up. There's this wonderful thing where Lou is eating celery, and they do this sound effect. Remember those little balsa wood baskets that used to have strawberries in?
Yeah.
Someone off stage next to a microphone would be crushing one of those every time Lou's biting into celery. And you can see it, Lou's losing it. He's just giggling through the whole thing, and this guy just keeps crunching away at this balsa wood. And Lou's just, it's hysterical.
And watching some of the shows reminds me of the early Graham Kennedy shows on Australian TV. And, yeah, it's actually the same sort of thing.
That's wonderful.
And they just have to keep on going, you know.
In 1956, 1 year before the release of their last film together, Bud and Lou were brought together on the Steve Allen Show for a live nationwide viewing audience. Now, the emotion was further heightened when Steve Allen announced the induction of Abbott and Costello, their gold record of Who's On First, into the world-famous Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York.
So it's not in Paterson, New Jersey?
No, not in Paterson, New Jersey. It's in Cooperstown, New York.
Thank you for that.
Now, interestingly enough, Abbott and Costello are their first and, to date, only non-baseball-playing celebrities ever to be inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Now, it was in the 1950s that Abbott and Costello's popularity waned as their place as filmdom's hottest comedy team was taken over by the before-mentioned Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. Another reason for their decline was, of course, overexposure. Now, Abbott and Costello's routines, although already familiar, had now been glutting the movie and television markets for a great number of years. Now, each year they were making two new films, while Real Art Pictures released most of their older hits. Their filmed television series was widely syndicated, and they did the same routines frequently on the Colgate program. So you're getting the same stuff from them, technically sort of the same stuff. Whether you're in the cinemas or you're watching TV or you're listening to the radio show, you were getting basically the same thing. And people stop laughing after a while, don't they, Mike?
Yeah, they do. He said, moving away from that. Universal Pictures dropped the team in 1955 after one more independent film, Bad Abbott retired from performing.
Oh.
Over the same years, Bud and Lou's off-screen relationship had become more and more strained. Now, their partnership had nearly dissolved before in the late 1940s and early 50s. Now, that rift was healed by Bud's suggestion for the name of the organization that the two had been building for underprivileged children in Los Angeles. He wanted to call it the Lou Costello Jr. Youth Foundation for Underprivileged Children. Lou was so touched by Bud's willingness to honor Lou's dead son, but the underlying tensions remained and led to an eventual dissolving of their partnership in 1957. Now, their partnership had been strained for many reasons. Lou's increasing attempts to control of everything, the stress of Bud trying to hide his lifelong epilepsy,
mm-hmm.
Universal dropped the comedy team in 1955, and Bud's increasing drinking, partly due to an attempt to control his epilepsy through alcohol. But this time, the breakup was permanent, and that same year, 57, both Bud and Lou became officially bankrupt after tax issues with the IRS.
That's kind of amazing, isn't it? All that success, all that money, and they still, not long after breaking up, had to file for bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Now, you can tell me if I'm right or wrong with this. I saw a movie which was supposed to be the life story of Abbott and Costello, and there was a scene where they were on stage, they were doing an early comedy routine, and I think it was Lou suddenly turned to Bud and said, "Hit me. Hit me quickly, hit me, hit me." And he couldn't figure it out, and then he slapped him across the face and he fell over. And it was because he could feel an epileptic fit coming on, and that was one of the ways that he got it under control, was he suddenly got a slap across the face that sort of snapped him out of it, if you will. And, yeah, just one of the ways that their partnership was so close that One could see the other one about to have the fit, and he would, during the filming, would just slap him, and it would snap him around. And nobody really knew why he was just suddenly whacking his friend across the face, but it worked, and there was a good reason behind it. There was just that friendship, that camaraderie, and that true understanding of each other that made it possible.
It's truly amazing. Also, around this time, there's another widely held belief, which is not true. Bud Abbott, as it's been reported, went on to the press and said in an interview, if everyone who was ever a fan of Abbott and Costello could send in just a quarter, 25 cents, I could get out of financial difficulties. He never said that.
Uh-huh.
What it was some newspaper journalist rang him during the course of the interview, said, well, suppose if everybody who was ever a fan sent you 25 cents, would that get you out of trouble? And Bud said, yeah, well, I guess it would, you know, but he never asked for it. When it came out in the press, it said Bud Abbott is asking all his old fans to send 25 cents. And a few people did. It only amounted to $300 or so.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, I never asked for that.
Gee, the press misquoting someone. Who would ever think?
Oh, it goes on. I've got another story a bit later on. So anyway, they broke up, Bud retired, didn't perform again, started his conversations with the Internal Revenue Service. Lou Costello made about 10 solo appearances on the Steve Allen Show and headlined in Las Vegas. He appeared in episodes of the GE Theatre and Wagon Train. Now, believe it or not, about 4 months ago, at 11:30 at night, they were showing an old episode of Wagon Train starring Lou Costello.
I'm glad you didn't say one young Lou Costello, but yeah.
Only one Lou Costello. He was playing an alcoholic who was travelling west and trying to make a new start. And it was a very, very powerful, dramatic performance. It was brilliant.
Hmm.
If you get a chance, Wagon Train, look it up. I can't think of the name of the episode, but look it up. It's brilliant.
Okay. So it's 1957 that their partnership dissolved. Basically. Yep. And unfortunately, 1959, shortly after making his lone solo film, The 30-Foot Bride of Rock Candy, Lou Costello passed away of Candy Rock, sorry.
30-Foot Bride of Candy Rock.
Lou Costello died of a heart attack just short of his 53rd birthday, brought on by the heart damage caused by his rheumatic fever that he'd contracted ages ago. So it caught up with him eventually.
Now, once again, here we go for bad journalism. Many people have famous last words. Now, Lou's final words were reported to be, that was the best ice cream soda I've ever tasted. Now, I don't know why, but it's been totally made up. Mm. I was doing research for this episode and came across an interview with the nurse who was attending him at the time, who swore his last words were, that will make me more comfortable.
Which would be more fitting, more in line with what you would imagine, you know. But make him laugh.
Yes, someone probably thought it was someone trying to score points off Lou's larger frame and saying, well, because of bad eating habits. I don't know, but it is a myth. It didn't happen like that.
No. Now, in 1994, jumping forward a lot of years here, we've mentioned Paterson, New Jersey quite a number of times, and it was 1994 that Paterson, New Jersey erected a life-sized bronze statue of Lou, holding a bat and wearing his trademarked derby from the Who's On First routine, and their main city park. So that was a nice little... there you go, Lou. Thanks for mentioning Paterson, New Jersey all the time.
Absolutely. And look it up on Google, and it's brilliant. It's a great-looking statue. Now, Bud, on the other hand, due to his debt with the taxation department, sold everything he owned, including a $125,000 ranch in California, to make up the back tax bite. His wife sold her jewelry and furs, and they relinquished their remaining share of profits from the old lucrative Universal movies.
Mm.
He still owed between $70,000 and $80,000 and had no idea where he'll get it.
Now, there comes one of the downsides of not having a manager, where the manager probably would have been putting money aside for them to pay their back taxes if he was a good manager. But, unfortunately, this way, the money's coming in, the good times are rolling, hey, let's have a party, and then later on, because from what I understand in America in that time, and I'm not sure whether it still works that way or not, you get your pay and it's up to you to put the money aside for your tax. Nothing comes out the way it does in Australia.
Yeah, exactly. So very difficult for the boys.
Lou had similar tax difficulties before he died, but he was able to pay off his obligations and still have something left because he owned their TV series, or he owned the rights to the TV series. So smart move, Lou. Now, Bud tried to restart his career in 1961 with a new partner called Candy Candido. Now, there's a mouthful for you to say. But it wasn't exactly successful, and his final television appearance included a performance in the dramatic episode of the General Electric Theatre.
But he did supply his own voice for an animated cartoon series of Abbott and Costello in 1966.
Oh, I remember that. Kind of scary, because I was born in 66, so...
You should remember these things late.
Yeah, you'd remember 1966, Mike. You were in university by then, weren't you?
Settle. Now, Bud eventually died of cancer after suffering from two strokes and prostate cancer.
Mm.
He died on April 24th, 1974. He was cremated and his ashes were scattered in the Pacific Ocean. Now, believe it or not, Bud Abbott and Lou Costello have three stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Wow.
One for radio in Hollywood Boulevard. One for motion pictures in Vine Street, and one for TV, also in Hollywood Boulevard.
And I think they're also at Grauman's Chinese Theatre. I think they've got handprints and footprints and that there as well.
Could be. I've not been there myself.
I have. Oh, I think they're just near R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Over the years, the boys' legend continues. In 1978, the movie Bud and Lou was made. Harvey Korman played Bud and Buddy Hackett played Lou.
That was the one I was talking about before.
Yes. They were pictured on commemorative postage stamps in 1991.
And, of course, you could do the old line there about people didn't know which side to spit on, but we wouldn't do that with them.
Promoting famous comedians.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the designs were made by the famous characterist Hal Hirschfeld. And other comedians honoured in the set were Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy, Edgar Bergen with Charlie McCarthy, Jack Benny and Fanny Bryce. Anyway, back to the boys. In 1988, the movie Rain Man with Dustin Hoffman. Dustin Hoffman's autistic character recites Who's On First.
Yeah, very, very droll and just no affection, just straight on, plays it out like he's trying to solve a problem.
Also, in 1993, the wonderful Mel Brooks did the film Men in Tights.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at one point, a man who looked and sounded like Lou Costello yelled, "Hey, Abbott!" Exactly the way Lou did when the Abbott walked out on stage out of the church.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Mm.
And, of course, in 1999, they lived on in The Simpsons, the episode Screamy Yellow Honkers, where Superintendent Chalmers and Principal Skidrash tried their hand at being Abbott and Costello on stage. But, of course, Skinner botches up the routine 6 seconds into the act, and with the whole thing is screwed up with bad delivery of the lines, and he comes up with the words, not the pronoun, but the player of the unlikely name of who is on first. Trying to explain the thing before the joke even comes out. So, yeah, totally botched it, just like I just did.
A much more fitting memorial for the boys. In 2003, Montclair State University in New Jersey dedicated a building in their new residence hall complex as the Abbott and Costello Center after Bud and his partner Lou Costello.
Oh, that's so nice. It wasn't in Paterson, New Jersey, was it?
Nowhere near Paterson, New Jersey.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So there we have it.
Bud Abbott and Lou Costello, look up their wonderful routines on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
7/13s is a great routine. Who's On First is an out-and-out classic. Do me a favour. Get Who's On First and show it to some kid who's never seen it.
Oh, you've got to. I was talking to one of my nieces the other week, and I mentioned Who's On First, and they looked at me and went, "What?" And I'm sort of... Abbott and Costello, Who's On First? Never heard of him. Oh, my God, come here. Had to drag him down. Sit down. Watch this. It's funny. And they cacked themselves laughing, for want of a better word.
There is nothing better than seeing people who've never heard of them see wonderful comedy like this. Okay, we got to move on.
We do.
We will be back, and it'll be a lot sooner than a year, unless this time round.
Let's just set our watches and see how long it takes, eh?
Honestly, we'll be back a lot sooner than that. We got to go. Until next time.
Don't go changing.
See you guys.
All right, who was on first? You
or me? Never. Never.
Never? Oh, okay. Bye.
Hey, Abbott.
What do you want, Costello?
Look, Abbott, I understand that you're going to be the manager of the Lou Costello Jr. Youth Foundation baseball team.
Yes, we just organized the thing.
Oh, you did?
Sure.
Well, I'd like to play on the team myself. You know, I know something about baseball.
Well, that would be accomplished.
Well, I'd like to know some of the guys' names on the team, so when I meet them on the street or in the ballpark, I'll be able to say hello to them.
Why, surely I'll introduce you to the boys. But you know, strange as it may seem, they give these ballplayers nowadays very peculiar names.
You mean funny names?
Nicknames, pet names, like Dizzy Dean.
Better Daffy?
Daffy Dean. And
I'm their French cousin.
French cousin?
Gouffet.
Gouffet. Well, now, let's see. We have on the bags, we have who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
That's what I want to find out.
What silly name? I say who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
Are you the manager?
Yes.
You know the fellow's name?
Well, I should.
Well, then who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name.
That's it.
That's who?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first baseman.
Who?
Have you got a first baseman?
Who is on first?
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Now tell me who's on first.
That's right.
I want to know what's the guy's name on first
base. No, what's on second base?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who is on first?
I don't know.
He's on third. Now, we're not mentioning third. Now, let's get together.
How did I get on third base?
You happen to mention his name.
If I mention a third baseman's name, who did I face playing third
base? No, who is playing first?
I'm not asking you who's on first.
Who is on first?
I'm asking you, what's the guy's name on third?
What is on second?
Who's on second?
Who's on first?
I don't know.
He's on third.
There I go, back on third again.
But I can't change their name.
You got a first baseman?
Absolutely.
When you pay him off every month, who gets the money?
Every dollar of it. Why not? The man's entitled to it.
Who is?
Yes.
So who gets it?
Sure he does. Sometimes his wife comes down and collects it.
Whose wife?
Yes.
Well, all I'm trying to find out is what's the guy's name on first base?
Listen, what is on second base?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who is on first?
I don't know.
Third base.
I pick it up. You got an outfield?
Well, surely.
The left fielder's name.
Why?
I just thought I'd ask.
Well, I just thought I'd tell you.
Then tell me who's playing left field.
Who is playing first?
Stay out of the infield.
Don't mention the names out here.
I want to know what's the left fielder's
what
name.
What is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
Third base.
Look, the left fielder's name.
Why?
Because.
Oh, he's center field. Now, you know these players as well as I do.
Look, you got a pitcher on the team?
Wouldn't this be a fine team without a pitcher?
The pitcher's name?
Tomorrow.
You don't want to tell me today?
I'm telling you, man.
Then go ahead.
Tomorrow.
What time?
What time what?
What time tomorrow you going to tell me who's pitching?
Now, listen. Who is not?
Now, break your arm, you say. Who's on first? I want to know what's the pitcher's
what's
name.
What's on second?
I don't know. Third base. Got a catcher?
Charlie.
The catcher's name?
Today.
Today, and tomorrow's pitching.
Now you've got it.
Now I've got it. Right. I don't even... Look, all we got is a couple of days on a team.
I can't help that.
A couple of days.
Don't get excited now.
Who's your next side?
Take it easy.
You know, I'm a pretty good catcher myself.
Well, tell me.
Now, I'll catch today myself. I'm going to catch.
Yes.
And tomorrow's pitching on a team.
Yes.
Now, Kamara throws the ball, and the guy up bunts the ball.
Yes.
Now, when he bunts the ball, me being a good catcher, I'll throw the guy out of first base. So I pick up the ball and throw it to who?
Now, that's the first thing you've said right.
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Well, that's all you have to do.
Is to throw the ball to first base.
Yes.
Now, who's got it?
Naturally.
If I throw the ball to first base, somebody's got to get it.
Yes.
Now, who's got it?
Naturally.
Naturally?
Naturally.
Oh, so I throw the ball to naturally.
You do nothing of the kind. You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's it.
That's what I said.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't.
Did I throw the ball to naturally?
But you don't.
I throw it to who?
Naturally.
That's what I'm saying.
You're not playing that way.
I throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
You ask me.
You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
Well, say
same as you. I throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
Now, whoever it is drops the ball, so the guy runs a second.
Yes.
Who picks up the ball and throws it to what? What throws it to, I don't know. I don't know, throws it back to tomorrow. Triple play.
Yes.
Another guy gets up, and it's a long fly ball to be caught. Why? I don't know. He's on third, and I don't give a darn.
What'd you say?
I said, I don't give a darn.
Oh, that's our shortstop.